So tell me more about these collaborations. How do they work and how do they fit in the, you know, overall innovation picture?
What we have done, sorry.
Oh, say hi to the cat.
She just has to be here.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, now the cat has become also a guest in the podcast. Doesn't matter.
Innovation Rockstars.
Innovation Rockstars.
In this episode, we welcome Justina Baba, innovation community leader from the world-renowned Swedish furniture store, IKEA.
Hi, and welcome back to Innovation Rockstars. Today is a very special edition because it's so hot in Germany. I brought a cup of ice cubes filled with some water. But anyways, I'm really excited to welcome Justina to the Innovation Rockstars episode today. Justina is an innovation community leader for retail innovation at IKEA, calling in from South Holland today. And she leads the Center of Excellence, in collaboration, encouraging internal and also external collaboration. Thank you very much for joining us. It's a pleasure having you. I'm really excited to talk about some of your most interesting findings.
Hi, Chris. It's really, really nice to be here today.
Yeah, thanks. And as always, we do start straight away with a short 60 seconds introduction sprint. The idea of the sprint is that we'll have a clock ticking in the background. And we'll try to take around 60 seconds to introduce, yourself, your career, your current role. So let's do this for the next 60 seconds. The virtual stage is all yours. Let's go.
Well, I have a background in consumer and market insights. This has been my profession for many years. Before joining the client side, I've been working for an agency. So I've been seeing the two perspectives. I've also been having a teaching period at the University of Applied Science, which I loved. And I think this is a bit what I'm carrying on to my current role as well, with the work with students. And then 8 years ago, I joined IKEA in the role of the consumer market insight. And after a few years, I moved to the innovation team. And this is me in the innovation team today. I lead the community, the innovation community, as well as the collaboration center of expertise.
Very professional. So now to get you to know just a little better, I do have three sentence starters for you. So I will start the sentences and I would like you to ask to complete those sentences. So let's see what you make out of it. Number one goes like this. To stay inspired and informed in the, which we know it is, ever-informing landscape of retail innovation, I...
So I actually think we shouldn't split retail innovation from all other kinds of innovation. We should look at it quite holistically, and this is what I do. And I really believe in having those two lenses, the micro lens, to have the good understanding of the world and what's happening, with the macro trends and how might they influence us. And on the other hand, to simply be very much tuned in with people, with, as we call them at IKEA, with the many people, with the consumers and customers, to see how do they react to all these big changes. And then, of course, you have someone there, maybe on the side, maybe in parallel, you also see what's happening, what the competition is doing, what other companies are doing. But this is basically a very, very complex picture, I think, to be following.
Yeah, so a very comprehensive approach. Okay, understood. Okay, sentence number two. So in your perspective, of course, a common misconception about fostering external academic collaborations at a global brand like IKEA is?
I have the impression that perhaps in global corporations, the value of it, the value of hearing those external voices, of having these voices included in perhaps even decision-making processes, is not quite appreciated, maybe not fully. It is complex. Of course, it takes control away, the full control away from the company, because if you have the counterparts, you are not alone then. And the value that it brings perhaps is not seen every time fully.
Interesting. Maybe we can discuss later why this might be the case. So I'll take a mental note. And then number three, finally, one thing that people might find surprising about innovation at IKEA is what?
I think just how much there is going on all across the IKEA universe. Not many people know that, and this is my favorite fun fact to introduce IKEA with. IKEA is actually a franchise system. It's organized in a franchise system, which means that there is many organizations that operate under the brand of IKEA. We have the franchisor organization. This is where I belong. We have our 12 franchisees who operate the retail operations. We also work closely with a design and research studio called Space 10, based in Copenhagen. They work, they are entirely dedicated to IKEA. So in this, if you think about it, there is 12 franchisees. There is a retail innovation on the franchisor side. There is product innovation on the franchisor side. There's a lot of innovation and development initiatives going on, which makes the whole picture very, very interesting.
Yeah. This makes it certainly not as easy as it was maybe fully centralized, right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about this. And that's maybe also the reason why, what inspired the creation of the, you know, IKEA innovation community, which we'll be talking in a minute. But let's take one step back first and talk a little bit about IKEA's, you know, distinct culture. I guess, you know, it's rooted in its Swedish origins, right? So we have very specific values, influences. How do they influence innovation processes and also collaboration within IKEA?
Yeah, so indeed, with the Swedish roots and the Swedish, of the very distinct IKEA culture, IKEA is a very collaborative organization as such. The structures are flat. The communication lines are short. You can go and approach anyone. There is no hierarchies. So that makes the collaboration already much more possible than in other places. And it's a culture. IKEA culture is born from retail operations where there's pace. There is, you know, there is the willingness to act. There is the non-nonsense attitude, which I think is very important, and also then helping the collaboration efforts. The values, IKEA has really strong values. One of them is the togetherness, you know, the coming together to solve problems. Again, coming from maybe quite tough environments when it comes to retail. And that togetherness also, of course, helps in collaboration efforts. And then there is innovation. I think IKEA has been from the very beginning a disruptor. We always say we have innovation in our DNA. We like to think of ourselves as everyone, single one of us is the entrepreneur. And that's actually true. We have certain, we have ideas, we have certain freedoms to use these ideas. And because of the flat structures, there is always, always a way to try to implement those ideas if you really are passionate about them. So as such, I think IKEA is a fantastic ground for both collaboration and innovation, and all this being kind of always pushed with the low-cost attitude, which then makes things even more or even less nonsense and more practical and applied. IKEA's culture is definitely helping both collaboration and innovation.
And how was then the setup of the innovation community at IKEA inspired? Did it root it out of, you know, the decentralization or the stronger decentralization, or because, you know, it was rooted more in the way IKEA does business and how IKEA works? So what inspired the creation of the community?
Yeah, that definitely played a role. There were a couple of factors coming into play there. So to start with, at that point, we still had a fairly fresh organizational setup, not the franchise setup that's been in place for decades, but fairly fresh organizational setup. I was new to innovation. I just moved teams. And I had the experience from my insights work at IKEA. Within insights, we had a really strong community. We worked all across all these different companies, IKEA companies, And innovation, I couldn't find that overview. I couldn't find, you know, a place, people and projects and so on. So that was also from a kind of a need that I had. And I started to talk about it with my colleagues. And it turned out that it's not just me. So that was a pronounced need of many, many colleagues working with innovation, but also people who were simply interested in innovation and couldn't find a good way of kind of getting in.
So there was no home, if you speak in, you know, even IKEA terms, there was no home, or at least no digital home, for all the activities, people, projects, processes. There was no platform that unifies all that. Is that,
indeed,
that true?
Yeah, indeed. Okay. And of course, we started to work also on a business level with having more a centralized approach. Mm-hmm. But the people level is exactly what the community started to address, to connect people, to bring people together to a conversation. So, you know, there's one thing, if we have a one portfolio view for the three or four teams working yeah. with innovation, but there is another thing when people know each other, know who is working with what are the learnings, and so on. So that was basically the role of then eventually the role of the community.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So tell me more about, you know, the start. So how was it rolled out? Probably gradually. How was it established? And maybe you can also talk about some of the initial challenges in actually setting it up.
Yes. So after I realized that there was a need like this, of course, I got myself together with a couple of other passionate people from other teams. So we have never been alone. I mean, that would be quite ironic to do a collaborative effort on my own. So there is always a small working group working with this topic. And I think it was, in a way, looking at it retrospectively, that was quite a standard design process, I suppose, that we have followed.
Sure.
I don't think I've seen it at that time. But we have been talking a lot to the people around us. We've been talking a lot to the senior management. What do they think? Step by step, we had brainstormed and we had started to formulate, you know, what is the value proposition of this thing we are doing? Mm-hmm. What does that even, you know, how is this going to benefit both the community, the people, but also the business? So it kind of brings the benefits from both perspectives. Who is it for? Who are the stakeholders, who are the users, what are we going to do? What does that even mean to have a community? A community is quite an intangible thing. When do we know that there was no community and then there is a moment there is a community? What marks the start of it? So these were some of the, how are we going to communicate? What are going to be our channels? Do we need a separate platform? So a lot of design considerations, actually, that went there into play. And when we were ready, because we had ongoing conversations also with the senior management, the buy-in was pretty much there, the sponsorship was there, and of course that helps a lot. And then we began with an event. We started with a kickoff, a get-together, as we called it. So an event when we came together all between the different teams for a little bit longer time. That was 3 or 4 hours sharing who is who, who's doing what. And this is how it began.
So, okay. And what about at least, you know, some of the challenges? Because, okay, understood. I mean, starting with the impact in mind, with the value in mind, with benefits in mind, sure, that's a very strong way to start this off instead of just, you know, experimenting and seeing what happens. That is great. But, you know, maybe, you know, was everybody just convinced from day one, like, yeah, super, let's just do it. And then, you know, bring a total, a very high amount of value to the people, or, you know, have there also been some naysayers or some initial challenges? And if so, tell me more about them.
I would really say that I don't recall challenges. It might sound a bit, maybe even over positive, but it's really true I think that was exactly the right time and the right place to launch an initiative like this. Were there naysayers? Maybe people, some people perhaps were a bit unsure. But we definitely had a green light from most people, and people were excited. People really thought that this is something that they need. And on top of it, we did take that experimental approach. Indeed, we didn't really know. We didn't have a long-term plan. We never anything like that has never been done at least in our part of IKEA. I'm always very careful saying at IKEA because there is so much going on all across. So we decided from the very beginning we will take that test and learn approach. And in that way, with this kind of learner's attitude, you also don't feel there is challenges. You have learnings and then you move on. So, yeah, I honestly don't think we had any bigger challenges at the beginning. The only thing, if I was really to look for something, and that was at the beginning as much as in the middle and even today, is perhaps the ambiguity of the term community. I think we call community all different things. This is a common word, and everyone perhaps has a slightly different understanding of it, which means that there could be a little bit of a confusion of the role of community and what is it, what's the purpose for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I, with time, I started to, anytime I would introduce the community, I would have a sentence, I have found it somewhere, I haven't come up with it myself, but for me, that was really important to put to distinguish between network and community.
Okay.
It says all communities are networks, but not all networks are communities.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between them and what makes a community is the common sense of belonging or common sense of shared identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, one has to find this common a denominator between people. And there was also something that I learned also on the way, that many times I think we call communities, perhaps simply communication channels are called communities.
Yes, that's true.
Simply because they bring people and there's information shared.
Yeah.
And this is something that has been always very important for me, to have a community communicating many people in the community to the many people in the community. With us as facilitators, perhaps, but not as those who push the messages out. And I think that is the ultimate goal, and this is the ultimate aspiration to have the conversation going.
Uh-huh.
With only slight kind of help from somewhere there, from the back stages. But it's really, the community is made by people.
And so if you define the community like this, what is then the common denominator for the IKEA innovation community?
Yeah, so that is the innovation. And we've been, that was one of those considerations at the beginning. For whom should it be? How broadly you can define it,
mm-hmm.
To make it still inclusive. IKEA is all about inclusivity, and we want that people benefit of good initiatives. Yet still focused.
Yeah.
So it doesn't become a community of everything for everyone, because then it's not a community. Then, of course, at the highest level, we are all community of coworkers at IKEA. We have, you know, common passion for IKEA for sure. But we wanted to have something a little bit more focused. So in that way, we did define the innovation community as the common platform for connections, discussions, learning, and inspirations,
mm-hmm.
for people with passion for innovation. So we didn't really want to limit ourselves to people who only work with innovation teams.
Yeah, no.
Because yeah. Again, that's IKEA. Sometimes you actually do quite a lot of innovation, but your title is, or even your team is not having innovation in the title.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, the common denominator was interest and the drive to take part in a conversation about innovation and about IKEA.
And how do you move on from there? I mean, yeah, I understand that there is a lot of excitement, movement, energy. You know, in the very beginning, everybody chimes in. This is a brilliant idea. Let's come together. Let's build that community. Now, over time, Of course, you need to make sure the community remains active, it's engaged, you know, it's productive. So at least something is, you know, coming out of this. Is it learnings? Is it more inspirations? Is it what is it? Yeah. So how do you make sure that the innovation community remains active and in best case even grows and becomes stronger over time?
Yes. So in our specific case, I feel that we've been taking 2 years now running the innovation community. Mm-hmm. We are going from strength to strength because more people know about us. Mm-hmm. and more people are interested to join the conversation. And I think there is something like a community member life cycle almost. Mm-hmm. That perhaps people first need to come and maybe just have a look if this is for them. Join one event, see what's the vibe, see what's the topics, is this for me, is this not? And some people will engage immediately. I mean, of course, that's a personality matter as well. Yeah. But some people need a little bit more time, and perhaps then they engage if they are being given the space, if they feel safe. And then a commitment perhaps comes after that, that they actually start feeling with time, yeah, this is where I belong. This is actually, you know, this is me. And I've been seeing this happening. So, of course, at the beginning, there's a lot of curiosity, as you are saying, mm-hmm. but there's not that much engagement. I think we actually were very lucky with this is a very energetic crowd. But, you know, commitment grows over time. And I think with time, we've been seeing people kind of moving on that journey from being curious to then starting to engage and being really committed. And we managed to develop, and maybe this is also something quite important in the community, especially in the workplace. I mean, communities are also, of course, in all different places, and in a workplace, that's a quite specific community, because on the one hand, you want to build trust, you want, you know, people to be themselves, but at the end of the day, it's still a professional environment. And even if at IKEA, we are super informal, it's still a professional environment. How to make that space kind of safe so people can be themselves, they can ask questions, they can joke. Mm-hmm. And somehow with time, we did manage to do that with certain level of, I guess, of informality, with authenticity, I suppose, of people, presenters especially. We started to have really good conversations during our meetups. We meet every month to talk about a project or an initiative. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, it was kind of formal. It was quite quiet in the chat.
Sure, yeah.
Back then, I was also trying. That was that was my learning. After each presentation, we would split into breakout rooms so we can discuss mm-hmm. in smaller kind of groups. That didn't work at all. That was my learning. That was too forced. That was not natural enough. And people didn't like it. So we stopped that. And instead, we would stay all of us in the main room, but with an open conversation. So sometimes people would chime in, simply opening their mic and speaking. And many times they would comment in the comments, and that would be buzzing. Mm-hmm. That would be so much energy and fun and a bit of banter. And, you know, and then you start really feeling that this is working. This is what that group of people needs. This is what that group of people finds fun and interesting and useful, of course. And then they start to contribute even more. So it's also a self-perpetuating. The better people feel, of course, the more they want to invest. It's the ongoing dialogue with people at all different, you know, in all different places. All different levels with all different roles, because as I said, we didn't limit ourselves to people who only work with innovation. So it's also interesting to hear, you know, if you don't work with innovation, how do you see this? What do you need? What would you like to see? That ongoing dialogue and kind of always being connected to the people you work with. Mm-hmm. I think that is also something that really helps them to be able to bring, you know, the topics, the speakers, the kind of conversation that is also working for that group of people.
So you're doing this monthly, if I'm understood, monthly events, yeah, at least, bringing the community together. How does it work? I mean, so do you you know, have specific projects you talk about, specific, for example, customer insights, specific, you know, trends and technologies that's different parts of the community, you know, share from different locations, from different teams? Of course, no matter if they have innovation in their title or not, but just solely based on the work and the impact that they're having. So is it like this? You have an agenda, then you talk about this, and who's bringing in the topics? Are you inviting people? Are they, you know, submitting their ideas to be part of the agenda? How does the community operate as such?
Indeed, we have three formats. So we have the monthly meetup, and it's all going on online. This is also a design consideration, you might think, simply because it's much more inclusive. With a global organization, we wanted to be able to keep connecting with our friends in Asia, for example. I mean, otherwise, we would need to, if that was in person, we would need to unfortunately exclude some people.
Sure.
So that was something that we decided to do. So yes, we have a monthly meetup when we, this is for mostly, I think 99% so far we've been doing with internal guests, introducing initiatives, introducing projects, or introducing big reports. So of course we have a very strong connection to our insights team. And then if there was something that they wanted to share, they always have a stage with us, and there's always interest in of course in that kind of content.
Yeah.
So that's the monthly meetups. Then so far in the almost 2 years, we have done three get-togethers. This is the longer format.
Understood. Okay, that's good. Yeah.
And on top of it, we have a Teams channel. We decided not to go for any dedicated platform.
Collaboration,
we work
sure.
with Teams. Yeah. This is tempting at the beginning to, you know, have a whole, you know, shiny new digital enabler. But because of that kind of test and try attitude, we said, okay, let's just start small and let's see what happens. And then we did learn that this is the most convenient. People don't switch between the channels. You know, we would need to produce a lot of content all the time to make people log in.
Yeah.
And Teams is just there for everyone. So that works really well. And we also have, of course, our place, our hub on the intranet where one can find all the content. So yeah, this is how we operate today. I mean, it might be changing soon because, again, it's always about trying something new, seeing what works, what doesn't. And sometimes the most, unexpected things work, which is great, but that's why it's really important to keep kind of going and not stagnate, keep it fresh.
And is there any, I don't know, specific project or an initiative that was born out of that community, or some, you know, some new type of collaboration that has had a great impact on, you know, operations, customers, or something that you can share?
So the goal of the community is not to innovate.
Mm-hmm.
It is to, it's an enabler also on our bigger kind of innovation landscape picture. It's defined as an enabler.
Mm-hmm.
An enabler that makes people, makes it easier for people to connect, to share, to learn. And I think in those three goals of learning, sharing, connecting between, that's definitely where I could say with a lot of confidence that we are hitting those goals. However, and you know, indirectly, I'm pretty sure today, tomorrow, in a year's time, there is also influence on the actual, you know, implemented innovations that then face the customer, because people connected, because people shared. Maybe there was ideas coming out, but that is not such a direct link today.
Yeah, sure. Okay. But that gives a very good picture and overview of that community. I do have some more questions about the ecosystem, but before we move forward, let's play a quick game, Justina. This is a super simple game, super fast. This is how it works, right? So I will ask a question, and the trick is that I need you to answer super fast. Speed is key. So don't think for too long. Just shoot. And if we need to discuss, we can discuss. That's the idea. It's called Rapid Fire Round. Number one, what is the most innovative piece of furniture you've seen so far?
So I cannot forget, I'm an 80s child. Huh? So in my parents' home, we had this bed that would turn into the desk.
Oh, yeah.
And, uh-huh. And it was funny because we weren't even in a small space. But somehow that was what there was. And I thinking about today, seeing those innovations coming, I mean, we also have a line now, quite new, coming with those multi-functional furniture. Uh-huh. That was quite an innovation in 1980s, I suppose.
Yeah, it was. That's a classic by now. I agree. Okay. Number two, if you had to choose between a traditional store or a digital showroom, which one would you choose and why?
Both. I think
that's cheating.
Omnichannel is the answer. I think perhaps we need to rethink the role of the traditional store, but mm-hmm. for sure mm-hmm. it's not one or the other.
Yeah. Okay. And then the last one that might have happened to quite a few people across the globe. I don't know, but did you ever got lost in an IKEA store?
Yeah, so I've heard this joke once, uh-huh. that this is a rite of passage. I mean, you know, you cannot be the real IKEA lover if you have not gotten lost and found in the IKEA store.
Well, if you find them one day, that's fine. Yeah. So I agree. Okay, fair. Well, I think I got lost once in an IKEA, but that's many, many, many years ago, actually. And it's really easy to find out and to get somewhere else, right? So not too big of a deal. Okay, I agree.
And I guess you get better with time, right?
Because you get better with time. You just, you know, start through getting the kitchen area, then the bedroom area, and finally, you know, there is some light somewhere, like natural daylight, so you're gonna find it. That's fair. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the ecosystem, the external engagements. Also, I'm interested because you've built quite an impressive, you know, external ecosystem for innovation. And why is it important for IKEA? I mean, okay, you have a great internal community, right? You have this big community and that's even international, multinational. So why even collaborating with external entities and especially academic institutions?
I think it's quite a simple answer. We can't solve today's challenges on our own. Mm. And this is true for any company, I suppose. The world is too complex and the issues are too systemic to try to solve them within the confines of one organization.
Yeah. So tell me more about these collaborations. You know, with whom? Maybe can make a few examples. And how do they work? How do they look like? What value do they bring? And how do they fit in the, you know, overall innovation picture?
Yeah. So what we've been focusing in the collaboration center of expertise is to bring different types of collaborations with the external world. And I suppose this is playing back to my background in consumer insight. Mm-hmm. I am used to bringing the external voice into the decision making, because this is basically what you do if you are a working in insight. And I think it's even more important to have that within innovation, whether this is in the scope of kind of finding out about the world or brainstorming, or then hopefully also developing solutions, not in isolation. What we have done,
Oh, say hi to the cat. No problem. Yeah, now the cat has become also a guest in the podcast. Doesn't matter. Can you make an example of a project? Are you allowed to share something?
I think we have been sharing also more broadly on LinkedIn. Hmm. Is perhaps just off the top of my head the two last initiatives that were concerned with this big program called Store of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Where we are looking at the Store of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And there we invited, there's several streams and it's a complex program. We have been working both with the Technical University in Delft, with the students, the design students, mm-hmm. And with Hyper Island in Sweden. Mm-hmm. Essentially, the types of collaborations here were actually quite similar. It was inviting students to develop ideas together, to ideate. The how it looked, it was different. It was very interesting to see different processes. But in the end, it was about having the external ideas coming in. And it's not so much, this is something that I think is quite important to understand. Doing these kind of collaborations, of course, it takes time and effort on both sides. And it will probably not result in the next groundbreaking idea. I think this is something that is... And it's really important to understand from the beginning that this, that the learning and the value is in the process of interacting with students, mm-hmm. of seeing the ways, you know, of thinking of the young people, of what they prioritize, what they find interesting, what they find exciting. And there's, of course, there's always some fresh twist. What I really also like working with students is they are not political.
Well, that's true. They're gonna learn this pretty soon, so no worries about that. But yeah, of course, that's a fair point. Yeah.
Yes, they just say what they think, and this is very refreshing.
Well, of course, that's fair to say. So, okay, that's the benefits for IKEA. Now, what's in for the students? How do you ensure, you know, the benefits are, you know, mutually, realized on both sides?
We make a lot of effort. That's why it's actually a dedicated role of mine to do this. This is not put on project managers to do it kind of on the side, because that would be too much, to make sure that there is a value. So we work very closely, of course, with the teachers or with the lecturers, with the program managers at the universities, making sure that students have an optimal learning experience, but also fun. I think that's also very important. That they find working with us simply enriching and also nice, that we give them the good impression that they can also learn from us. During the sessions, in the prep of the sessions, because you will see very quickly the differences in the thinking, perhaps in the academia and in business. And I think it's a really a nice, again, mutual check that things can be done differently.
That's it. Yeah. Is there anything like a certificate, like students get the, you're now an IKEA innovation practitioner associate, something like that? I got to know students like certificates. That's part of why they study. Just asking.
We have done that last time with Hyper Island. Indeed, we didn't think about it. For us, that was completely a blind spot. But the program manager from Hyper Island said they would love to have something tangible that they have a little bit
okay.
on paper.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So there were certificates issued after that. And there's, you know, there's awards normally of one sort or another. And we make it playful.
Because you're right, some people love to have things on paper. I totally agree. Not everybody needs it, but there is, you know, a cohort. So, okay. I agree. Makes sense. Cool. Yeah, that's actually pretty nice, because I guess there is a lot in for the students as well to really see how organizations actually work from the inside. That is a lot of value to students. And, you know, maybe one or other might also decide to join IKEA later on because they resonated very well with the things you do, with the culture that you have. So I guess that's indeed beneficial for both sides, and always good to have the students and maybe even some of the researchers too, I don't know, perspectives from there.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So we're coming to an ending already, but I do have three more things. If there is somebody out there listening to this episode right now, be it, you know, watching the video or indeed listening on some of the podcast portals. Now, if you could give one piece of advice to them, to anyone in a company who is looking to foster a vibrant innovation community, what would your piece of advice be?
I need to do more than one. I think make it simple would be one. Definitely just try with as simple way as possible and then build from there. And second would be make sure that you really understand that you are building a community and what is it for and what will be the benefit both for the business and most importantly for the community, because without people you don't have community. So if you need to build, want to build one, you need to make sure that people see the value in what you are doing. It's not just about having, you know, gathering people in one channel and hoping for the best. There needs to be more.
That's great. It already answered two of my questions, because I also was aiming at the simplicity. But you already, you know, mentioned this perfectly. It makes perfect sense. I also say don't overcomplicate, you know, in the beginning, right? It doesn't make any sense. And of course, if you have a community that doesn't have people, you don't have a community, you have nothing. Of course, that's very valid. Okay. And then, yeah, then I'm just left with one final question, which is, you need to tell me, please, your most impactful innovation rockstar moment. If you reflect your journey at IKEA, your entire journey at IKEA so far. What is your impactful, most impactful innovation rockstar moment?
I think there were quite few, but of course the freshest in my memory is the most recent one. So although I have 8 years under my belt, I will recall the last get together we had in June, the 2 half days. That was a very successful event. And then being there at the background, I'm always there in the background. I hardly even listen to the actual content because I'm busy with everything else. Seeing the energy in the chat, seeing how many people turned up, seeing people's appreciation, the questions, the energy, it's just this moment of thinking, you know, we are doing something really useful. It's got impact and we are actually doing it pretty well.
And that's your rockstar moment. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for sharing this. Sounds awesome. And that's it already, Justina, for this episode. I know there is much more to share, but we'll only have limited time in one episode. So thanks for sharing the journey, the insights, the learnings, and also some of the recommendations you can give. It was a pleasure to listen to you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Chris. It was a pleasure.
All right. And then to everybody listening or watching, you know, if you want to learn more, then, or, if, you know, have any question, then simply, you know, shoot us an email at info@innovationrockstars.show. If not, enjoy all the other episodes on any major podcast, you know, distributors you can get. That's it from Innovation Rockstars for this one. See you soon. Thanks. Bye bye.
That was innovation rockstar Justina Baba on the genesis of the IKEA innovation community and a little behind-the-scenes look at IKEA's ecosystem. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Don't hesitate to reach out to us at info@innovationrockstars.show with your feedback, comments, or questions. And if you're hungry for more inspiring innovation stories, be sure to check out our website at www.itonicsinnovation.com/podcast or browse through our Innovation Rockstars channel on all major podcast platforms.